Welcome to Security Architecture Podcast, where we help cybersecurity professionals to stay ahead of the curve and ensure they are successful in their cybersecurity journey.
Hello, I'm Evgeny.
Hi, I'm Dimitri.
We have here Bob from Netskope, and we're going to talk about SASE for outbound. Bob, can you please introduce Netskope and what you guys do?
Sure. Thank you, Dimitri, for inviting me to what sounds like your first kickoff of this type of a podcast series. So very excited to join you guys today and spend some time talking about the very exciting topic of SASE. So my name's Bob Gilbert. I'm VP and Chief Evangelist of Netskope. And hopefully, you know, as we talk about SASE, think of Netskope as a modern cloud security platform, and think of it as a way to give security and network teams a different way of thinking about their architecture in light of the changing world around us. And so a modernized approach. And we're going to talk a lot about that today.
That makes a lot of sense. So let's start with our first question. What's the name of the offering addressing the outbound browsing?
Yeah, so the overall solution that Netskope provides is called the Netskope Security Cloud. And when you think of what that is, that encompasses a lot of things, under the SASE umbrella, right? And if you look at Gartner's definition of SASE, there's core components of secure web gateway, cloud access security brokers, zero trust network access, SD-WAN, and firewall as a service. And our solution is really centered around SASE, and it covers everything except for SD-WAN and firewall as a service natively. And the way that we cover those components is through partnerships. So a lot of integration points, and we can talk more about that later with SD-WAN. But Netskope Security Cloud.
Nice. So looks like you guys capture really a lot on the SASE platform, and I hope in the next episodes and parts of our podcast, we'll talk about the other parts like remote access and CASB. For now, let's talk about the outbound part. So tell me a bit about the maturity of the outbound part of your products. How long you've been around? How you describe how mature it is?
That's a great question. So I personally have been with the company for about 6 years. We actually deployed our first inline cloud proxy in 2013, and this was centered around CASB, but it was inline CASB, so really a cloud proxy. And if you fast forward to today, we have more than 1,000 customers, including some of the largest organizations in the world, that are using the Netskope Security Cloud. So we're processing quite a bit of traffic for some very large organizations across cloud and web usage. And I can share some numbers around that in a little bit.
So the next question would be around the licensing of the product. How would you license your product to your customers? Is it by user, devices, concurrent connections, or based on the bandwidth that you're consuming?
Yeah, that's a great question. Again, it's per user, so it's cloud friendly pricing. Based on per user contracts, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year contracts, and so nothing outside of that. It's very straightforward. You count how many users you have, and the security capabilities that you want to apply to those users, and that dictates your per user price.
Is the user mean one device, or user mean several devices?
It could be several devices. It's based on a per user seat.
Okay, so because right now I have a laptop, an iPad, and a phone, so at least three devices.
And they can all be at the same time, right?
That is correct. Yeah. So like you, I think I actually have like 6 or 7 devices. So I would be counted as one user, even though I'm going across different devices.
Okay. Let's move on and talk about architecture. So describe in high level, we will talk later on about more in-depth, Netskope architecture. Cloud, yes. On-prem locations. Do you want to share your screen maybe or share a diagram?
Yeah, let me, I think I only have two slides to show. And you can see my screen here.
Yes.
This first slide is a high level view of our platform. And what's interesting about this is it's 100% cloud native. I came from a company years ago called Riverbed that, we shipped an Orange appliance to enterprises around the world, deployed at many branch offices and data centers. And this is basically a cloud native solution that when customers purchase it, we give them a login to this. But what's behind this login is a very powerful set of cloud security services. So if you look at the orange boxes here, this kind of represents some of the functionality pillars of the platform. It starts with a next-gen secure web gateway. And when we call that next-gen, and we'll get into some of the details of that, because what we've effectively done is we've combined an inline proxy covering cloud, so inline CASB, with secure web gateway, with cloud DLP, kind of all formulated into one. We call that a next-gen secure web gateway. CASB was the first product that we shipped way back in 2013, primarily focused on use cases around protecting data at rest in managed cloud applications like Office 365. And then public cloud security is all about protecting data in environments like AWS, Azure, and GCP. So, ensuring that your policy configuration is compliant, your posture is right with cloud security posture management. And then private access is the zero trust network access component of our solution. And that's all about providing fast and secure access to private applications that are hosted either in your own data center or in the public cloud. So those are kind of the functional areas. Now the blue boxes is really interesting because these are the security microservices that we apply to the areas of functionality. And what's interesting about these is this is 100% cloud native, horizontally scalable. So you can apply services like data protection and threat protection across SaaS, IaaS, and web with one platform. What's interesting also is you log into the platform with one console, and there's effectively one console, one policy engine, one pass DLP, one analytics system, and one steering client for getting traffic to the Netskope Security Cloud for real-time visibility and control. And then finally, the last 2 points I want to point out here is in this box on the bottom is some of our secret sauce. And one is the ability to decode and extract rich contextual detail about cloud and web usage in a way that other vendors cannot. And that's important for identifying risky behaviors, activities, data movement that's going to places that's hard to detect. And then it runs on what we call NewEdge, which is one of the world's fastest and largest security networks, Netskope NewEdge. And then finally, over to the right here is we built the platform to be open and integrated. We'll talk more about that in a little bit, but we truly believe to allow customers to really unlock the capabilities of some of their existing security investments to cover more workflows by adding those to Netskope to unlock capabilities. So that's kind of the high level. From an architecture standpoint, the way I like to look at it is if you think of what we're protecting, it starts with cloud applications. And if you look at, there's two areas of cloud applications. There's the managed applications that IT has administrative access to, the Office 365, perhaps there's Salesforce and other applications. And then there's the unmanaged applications that are brought in by users and lines of business. And what's interesting about this is that today, about 95% of cloud application usage in the enterprise is driven by unmanaged cloud applications, so not managed by IT. So in order to cover this, we also, from a target standpoint, we cover website traffic as well. I mentioned public cloud environments. And then, so to cover that, when you think of the Netskope Security Cloud, running on NewEdge, how do you get users from managed devices to be able to cover that infrastructure? And this is where our cloud native proxy comes into play, and our next-gen secure web gateway comes into play. So here we're able to inspect all cloud and web traffic in real time, going for users accessing those services, both going there and coming back, and applying advanced data and threat protection to those environments. There's a number of different deployment options that allow to get traffic to the Netskope Security Cloud. From managed devices, one common way is you deploy a Netskope steering client that goes on the managed endpoint. And then we also have options for users that are in a, on-premises, sitting in an office or at headquarters, where you can actually steer that user's traffic using, an on-premises footprint to get traffic to the cloud as well. So once you do that, the other interesting use case here is, what about users that are on unmanaged devices that you can't put a footprint on that user's device? And this is where a reverse proxy comes into play. So as part of the Netskope Security Cloud, one of the deployment options is you deploy a reverse proxy. So when users connect to their managed cloud applications, like Office 365, Box, et cetera, they go through our reverse proxy. It integrates with identity providers from Okta, Ping, Microsoft, et cetera. And it allows us to steer those unmanaged user traffic to the Netskope Security Cloud, even without putting anything on the endpoint. And then finally, there's the notion of that's the inline proxy capabilities, but there's also protecting data at rest that's sitting there in managed cloud services. So this is where our API-enabled protection comes into play. So we have APIs for about 20 different cloud services where we can inspect the content that is at rest in those cloud services, and then apply policies to that content, whether you're looking for things like malware or sensitive data that's being exposed in places it can't. That's where API-enabled protection comes into play. I think CASB
is definitely not a 2-minute conversation. It needs the entire show by itself.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? And then finally, the last part of it is the public cloud security. So this is where public cloud security and also accessing private applications. So for private apps, it's the way you tackle that scenario is with zero trust network access. So this is using the same client footprint. You're basically providing the ability to get fast and secure access directly to those private applications that are hosted either in your data center or your public cloud. Now, what's beautiful about this architecture is that it's, again, we're doing all of this with this one platform. So again, it's
and is this replicated across the world? And you mentioned private cloud. I'm guessing you're not using public IIS like AWS, Azure, or GCP. So yes, tell us about this architecture a bit.
Yeah, so that is get rid of that here. So that is a good question. And when you think of Netskope, when one of our core architectural tenets when we started out from the get-go was to not use the public cloud. There's a lot of challenges with using the public cloud. You can't simply take your security controls And, you know, think of it as an appliance, moving that appliance footprint to the cloud so you could deliver security from the cloud. And I think one of our competitors puts it really well, just to give them kudos, which is, you know, that's like saying, hey, let's stick, you know, 1,000 DVDs in AWS and let's call it Netflix, right? You just, that's something you don't do. So the idea here is, you know, one of the challenges with the public cloud is, you know, it's great for compute resources and what have you, but it's not good for delivering packets from one point to the other. There's a lot of challenges with performance and congestion, and it results in poor end user experience. So what we've effectively done is we have built what is essentially the one of the world's largest and fastest security networks. Think of it as an overlay to the internet. We call it Netskope NewEdge. Now, this is a $100 million investment. So this isn't a small task, right? And it enables us to deliver advanced inline security, think of it, without impacting end user experience. Our NewEdge network consists of more than 45 global data centers. Netskope customers can be served by any point of presence globally. And it's also highly available. So if there's unexpected issues with their default point of presence, they're automatically routed to another point of presence. But it's also optimized for performance. And a lot of work has gone into not using the public cloud to make sure that those users, as they're accessing, whether it's Office 365 or general websites, they have a good experience and also a secure experience.
Gotcha. Great. This explains really well. And you answer also about Okta. I guess, do you tie back to other IAM solution as well, or Azure AD?
Yeah, so we integrate with IDPs like Okta, Ping, Microsoft, Centrify, and others. You know, there's tight integration for authentication workflows, you know, irrespective of whether you're using our inline proxy, forward proxy, or you're using a reverse proxy where we have, you know, SAML integration, et cetera. We also integrate with them by, you know, for example, with Okta, we can support step-up authentication workflows and make that as part of policy. So when you're creating a policy based on a certain condition or activity or what have you, you can make the action you take, not just block, but you can actually step that user up, you know, based on a set of conditions. And we do that by integrating with the IDPs.
Excellent. So you also talked a little bit about the scale of your solution, right? Using your own servers in your own data centers. How are you making your user browsing better and faster? I mean, do you have any offloading to the local machine? Because, you know, if you're going to check every single request on the cloud or in as part of the solution itself, there is always the latency of sending the data and receiving the data. So how do you go around that?
Yeah, there's been a longstanding trade-off between security and performance, and we all know this, right? This is this is one of those architectural kind of political arguments that we could probably spend a whole podcast talking about. And you know, we built our platform to address that, so you don't have to make that trade-off. So in addition to providing low latency global reach, our network interconnects with consumer and last mile providers. So it optimizes the connection from the user to their destination, whether they're going to cloud and websites. It's also our NewEdge points of presence are also collated in data centers and connected to all major consumer and commercial networks as well. So basically what that means is traffic from Netskope customers is routed via the fast path to the Netskope security cloud and then to the application or website being accessed. So the idea here is, you know, it's in a formal life, one of the sayings we used to say is the fastest trip you can ever take, and this is coming from an optimization company, is the trip you don't take, right? and if you think of a lot of architectures out there that hairpin data back through a data center to take unnecessary trips, or they rely on the public internet where you have no control over the path, addressing those two conditions are going to make sure that you don't have to take those trips. So optimizing it gives you two advantages. One is that you're able to deliver all of these robust security services from inline DLP inspection and malware inspection and granular controls, real-time controls, without impacting end user experience. And then there's also a number of conditions where you actually improve the performance without having the proxy in place, because all of a sudden you get to run on the Netskope NewEdge network.
Becoming better than the ISP.
Yeah, exactly.
So tell me this, if I'm in Europe and I want to browse a website in Canada or US.
Yeah.
How will this connection go?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So when you think of our 45 global points of presence, and wherever you are, we are going to be, we've architected this where we're essentially less than 20 milliseconds from virtually every person on Earth, right? So we're going to get you first on that first hop to the closest Netskope point of presence. And then through everything I just talked about with our peering relationships, with our optimizations that we have, we're going to get you to your destination at a fast and rapid clip. And by the way, with security services that are attached to that.
So I'm going to the Netskope cloud peering in Europe, and then I'm using your network to get to US.
That is correct. You are using our network, so you're not. You're not all of a sudden jumping on a public internet connection.
Gotcha.
That's why it's fast.
It's like a priority line, basically, you're saying.
You got it. Exactly.
Nice. So let's move to architecture questions, even kind of a bit lower on the level. And let's talk about office connectivity. You mentioned in your diagrams that there's multiple ways to connect. And I want to touch on office first and then touch on the end user later. Let's start from the office. What's my options?
Yeah, so when you connect to the office, there's a number of options. One is the Netskope steering client that I talked about. That's gonna give that user on the managed endpoint wherever they connect from. It could be the office, it could be remote, we're all working from home, it could be working from home. We also have the ability to steer that user's traffic when they're in an office using, setting up like a GRE IPsec tunnel to the Netskope security cloud. That is another optional deployment that you can perform. And then the other way that we could do it is we have a number of SD-WAN partners that already provide kind of that local network breakout. They provide kind of this the modern network infrastructure for those users, connecting to the network. So we have integration with them. Again, we're setting up IPsec or GRE tunnels between Netskope and the SD-WAN solution. Traffic is then routed to Netskope for visibility, control, and protection on top of that SD-WAN infrastructure. It's really a seamless integration that involves
a simple tunnel
configuration.
Yeah. Several questions here. So you mentioned tunnel. If I have 50 offices or 100 offices, and there is a partnership with the SD-WAN provider, is there a way to automate the configuration? Because I don't want to go office by office and configure it manually. Is there a better way to do this?
Right. So inherently, this is a common configuration. There's, we've had very large deployments that have taken in less than a week to deploy out. So, typically one of the benefits of SD-WAN is that you have kind of the central notion of configuration, right? So it's being able to take advantage of that central notion of configuration. And remember, you're basically configuring from the Netskope Security Cloud. You're doing that centrally as well. So you're performing a tunnel configuration.
So you're not provisioning to the SD-WAN, but you're matching configuration on each side.
Right. That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Always a question customers ask, GRE or IPsec?
Yeah, you know what? For us, we don't care. what we've found is that it depends on the SD-WAN vendor, right? There's different levels of support that they have with regards to industry standards around IPsec or GRE. And we have some vendors that work better with IPsec, some vendors that work better with GRE. It depends on their implementation. We Venus, work with both of them.
Limitation?
Yeah, I'm not gonna mention any particular name.
No. I mean bandwidth. If there's a bandwidth limitation on GRE or IPsec, there's a difference.
Yeah. So for us, there's no limitation with our implementation. We're gonna work with either of them, and it doesn't come down to a bandwidth limitation. It's more of a sometimes some vendors haven't gotten the full support of things like. The ciphers that are in place to that meet up to the industry standard. So we would recommend, you probably want to do IPsec then instead of.
You mentioned the end user agent, also an option from the office, but also work remotely as we right now work remotely. Let's talk about this a bit more. What's my options? What kind of ports and protocols do I route right now? Can I disable because I don't like Netskope, and I want to go somewhere I'm not supposed to go?
Right. Yeah, it's a common question. So first and foremost, our platform covers all cloud and web traffic, so port 80, 443. But it's also important to, if this is a conversation 7, 8, 10 years ago, we may be saying, what ports do you cover, right? And really, you got to take a step back, right? More importantly, we provide deep inspection that goes beyond simply looking at URLs, right? This is important because 85% of today's web traffic is cloud, and the language of the cloud is complex, and it consists of JSON and API communications. So we have a patented technology that can decode API and JSON traffic and extract rich contextual details about cloud usage. So when you talk to a vendor that is architected to look at HTTP, asking them, what ports you cover, it's probably worth having a follow-on discussion on how well do you cover those ports and how deep.
Okay.
And this is one of our question. Strengths, our bread and butters, right?
Gotcha. Does people ask for additional ports coverage, like the full spectrum, DNS, SSH, or any? No, the entire tunneling of the entire traffic. Is this a request that often come?
That's one of the SASE configurations, right? Is firewall as a service. And all you're meaning by firewall as a service is you're now doing all ports and protocols, right? For your egress traffic, et cetera. And we don't, currently that hasn't been our priority use case that we're driving. The way we typically tackle additional ports and protocols is with our Zero Trust Network Access solution, because that's all ports and protocols, right? So,
okay.
So you kind of solve that use case through Zero Trust Network Access, and then you apply the next gen Secure Web Gateway to all port 80 and 443 traffic using all the advanced stuff that we do.
Is something preventing me to remove the client? Can I also protect?
I wasn't dancing around that on purpose, right? So for Netskope, when you look at what we do, so from a Netskope client, you have a number of options. One is an administrator can hide the client from the toolbar, so they can't see it. You can also configure it so if they try to uninstall it or disable it as a service, they are either unable to do that or they need a password, administrative password, in order to do that. So we put a lot of controls in place that prevent users. The other thing that we do is an interesting workflow is we work with identity providers. And if we have an optional configuration where when you have users that connect to cloud and web services and we don't, and there is, I'm sorry, cloud services, and they're using a reverse proxy, what we could do is we can look for the presence through the identity provider, the presence of a Netskope client. If we don't see one, we could force a workflow where they have to deploy a Netskope client in order to access that resource.
Like conditional access almost.
So it's
that's right. You got it.
It will show them some sticky portal where they have to download and install it. Until then, they can.
That's exactly. It'll direct them where they have to download and install it. Exactly.
Can I take it to a next level? I have the client, but I don't have an antivirus. I'm not part of domain or any other conditions.
Yes. Yes. So you can, in the Netskope Security Cloud, we reflect device posture in access control, right? So you could put a policy in place that basically reflects device posture. Has this device, joined the domain, right? Does this device have a certificate, that is deployed? Does this device have the latest BitLocker encryption on the device? So we take that and generate device posture, and then you can bring that into policy when giving access.
Excellent. How about pushing the client? Is there any way to distribute the client at scale in the organization?
Yeah. So the answer is yes. When you think of deploying Netskope, the client is the simplest way to get started. And there's a couple levels to that. One is I can do a deployment right now to you two, and it would probably take me less than 5 minutes, right? So I would go into the Netskope console. I would add your email addresses, and it would send you an email with an invitation to deploy the client. It takes like 1 minute to click on the install, and then all of a sudden we're steering all your cloud, web, and private app traffic. So that's one example. The other example is we have very large enterprises. I just heard of one a couple weeks ago that deployed the Netskope client to more than 50,000 endpoints, and it took just a couple weeks as part of a staged rollout. And you use tools like your typical SCCM or Jamf to deploy that infrastructure. We also integrate with MDM tools to facilitate a deployment as well.
It also includes mobile devices.
That is correct. Yeah. So it's PC. It's Windows, Mac, iOS, Android. We also support Chrome OS as well as a deployment option. So there's a lot of flexibility.
Chrome OS popular in schools, I guess, or universities?
Yeah, you hit it. It's exactly right.
You actually bring me to my next question. Any other options for connectivity? Maybe you work with ISP, maybe you work with OEM partners, or you plug to some other platform.
Yeah, other than, we have integration points with the platform with other products. We can ingest logs from a firewall, we can connect a SIM to, like Splunk or QRadar. We can connect to identity providers for various workflows. But there's no connectivity options, if you will.
Did anybody try to OEM you to put you as part of the router somewhere, or like, I don't know, Nokia?
No, not yet. Not yet.
Great.
I tell you, I have to kill you. No, I'm just kidding.
We're going to move on and we're going to talk about Secure Web Gateway. And the reason why, because outbound browsing, it's basically in a way Secure Web Gateway. And sure. I took several capabilities from Gartner that describe in what they think Secure Gateway should have. And we're going to talk about this. One is pretty simple, and we kind of spoke already, is ability to categorize URLs by groups. So tell me what you guys do, how you guys do this, and if it's OEM by somebody else or it's developed by you.
Yeah, that's a so that is a core functionality of our next-gen Secure Web Gateway. So we support URL filtering with more than 100 categories, over 200 languages that we believe cover 99.9% of the active web. We also support dynamic web page ratings for about 70 different categories, plus you can create custom categories. In addition to that, so we don't come up with those categories and lists ourselves. We use different vendors for that's what they specialize in. But what we do is we take that and we apply machine learning on top of that, because there's a level of efficacy that we want to achieve if there's miscategorizations or there's sites that haven't been categorized yet. How do you, what process do you go through to perform categorization?
Is the dynamic part, this is where the machine learning going?
That is correct. So imagine you have a website that hasn't been categorized yet. It's a new website and what have you. But fundamentally, you can look inside the content payload of the site and, that's a guns and ammo website, right? They're talking about,
So this is what's machine learning.
Our algorithm understands that. And all of a sudden we put that into the category of guns, right?
Will this
be done
before? Yeah, so this is kind of dual question. When will they do this? When I browse or before? And what Dimitri was asking as well.
Yeah, it would be, you have to have the sacrificial lamb, right? You can't guess where the user's going, right? So this is basically, once that user browses there, we're going to do that dynamic classification. And the next time they go to that site or another user goes to that site, we now know that that's a weapons category, and we could take action from there. Now keep in mind, this is URLs and websites and extensive database, machine learning. But on top of that, we also have a database of more than 33,000 cloud apps, right? This is a big advantage that we have in the industry. And our threat research team, our threat labs team, uses more than 50 different criteria and researches every one of those cloud apps and applies a risk score to that. And this is important for CISOs that want to not only understand cloud usage, but also start assessing their risk. And then you could take the results of that research in the product and reflect that in a policy. So, for example, if my users are going to any cloud storage app, and we have more than 400 different cloud storage apps in our database, if they're going to a cloud storage app that scores low on our cloud confidence index score, we're going to go ahead and take action. We're going to coach those users to use our corporate managed instance of Office 365 OneDrive or what have you.
You mentioned dynamic categories. So
yes.
I'm guessing as a new customer, I can put bad categories block and you automatically block whatever you think is bad.
That is correct. Yeah, that's table stakes capability.
Can I have my own blacklist?
Yes. Yeah, you could set up, you can have your own whitelist as well. So you could set up whitelists and blacklists and totally custom outside of what's out of the box.
Is there any interesting insight that were found by your threat research unit that you can share?
Yeah, you know, there's one of the interesting findings that we've, and this has been going on for, you know, quite some time, 6 months to the last year, is there's been a big rise in cloud-enabled threats. And what I mean by that is, you know, threats typically have taken on the, you know, hey, let's look at malicious payloads. Let's look at malicious websites. And that's kind of, you know, core to a typical proxy. But what we've seen is the rise in fileless threats and spear phishing that uses cloud applications and the whitelisting of cloud applications to actually perform the spear phishing. So there's been a big rise in that, and really what that has led into is you got to do more than just URL classification and web filtering. You have to actually understand what's going on within the URL to identify those risky activities and those risky behaviors. And that's a big part of what Netskope does. I talked about earlier the cloud traffic is API and JSON.
The context.
It's the context. You got to be able to decode that and extract details about the fact that, you know what, that Google Drive environment is actually being used. That's being whitelisted, is being used by bad actors to serve up pages that allow you to basically harvest credentials, right? And why are they able to do that? And first of all, why did the company whitelist Google Drive that allows bad people to have access to it? It's pretty simple, right? If you look at typical URL filtering, you're looking at drive.google.com. You're looking at the URL, right? So you have to make a decision from a security standpoint. Do I block drive.google.com or do I allow it? Well, gosh, if I block drive.google.com, it's the same URL that's used, whether it's the personal instance, the partner instance, somebody sharing content with my marketing team from an outside Google Drive share, or it's my corporate instance of Google Drive. It doesn't matter. The URL persists across instances. So you can't block drive.google.com. You're gonna screw up the digital transformation happening, right? So you have to whitelist it as a security team. And there's been events in the news that's widely publicized that the bad guys are figuring that out. And they're figuring out that this cloud whitelisting that's taking place because of lack of ability to inspection, they're taking advantage of it. And we see that it seems like every other day there's a new story about it.
When I want to download a file from a website, tell us how you're going to inspect the file for malicious content.
Yeah. So when you look at malicious downloads, so first of all, the Netskope Security Cloud, from a threat protection standpoint, we apply multiple anti-malware engines. We have 40 plus threat intel feeds. We also have our own threat labs, IOCs that we take. We take anonymized data from our more than 1,000 customers. We take all of that and we look at all traffic going to and from the cloud and web. And we're gonna block the malicious payloads as part of that. Our system also performs deobfuscation and recursive file unpacking, and we sandbox portable executable files as well. So it's an advanced threat system for, you know, I talked about the fileless side, being able to, you know, detect, you know, phishing and granular within the instance. We also inspect the payloads in a very advanced way as well.
What if part of the website is malicious, like a flash or something else, what you capable or not capable to do?
Yeah, so that's another area that we do very well in. So, you know, we use a number of different techniques with regards to users accessing the Wild West of the World Wide Web, right? So part of that is we use some of the things I just talked about for files. We use that for websites as well. So you know, we tie into external feeds, databases of malicious websites, and then we look at indicators of compromise taking place as users are accessing you know, various websites. In addition to that, we also have machine learning powered behavioral analytics. Now, this is important because this isn't just, you know, this is taken in context of not just a user accessing a website and we know the website's malicious, but it's also taken in context of what is that user actually doing that could signal malicious intent. It could
UBA.
Be the, it's UBA that's built into the platform. So an example, two examples. One is you can have a user that has had their credentials compromised and now they're accessing the cloud or web from a device that, hey, we've never seen that domain before, or I'm sorry, we've never seen that host of that device, host name of that device before. And also we recognize that user also tried to unsuccessfully log into some cloud services. So we tie all that together. That's an external threat, but also for the insider threat, you know, being able to detect, a user that, we have this anomaly called covering your tracks that I like to demonstrate. And imagine a user going into they upload data to like Office 365 OneDrive. They share the data as soon as they upload it. After that, they delete the data. So why did they delete the data after they shared it? So we take all of those signals and we surface behavioral anomalies that could be indicative of malicious intent. And that's a big important part of that. And then finally, the last part of this is being able to follow the data as part of that malicious intent and identify things like data exfiltration taking place from a managed cloud application where the data was downloaded. And then sometime later, that same data, it could have been renamed, by the way. We have deep inspection, true file type inspection. And then they upload that data to their personal cloud app. So we follow that data flow and can alert on that activity as well. And you can put in compensating controls to make sure it doesn't happen.
Great. Well, you mentioned about Shadow IT, and because you guys are Cosby, I don't see any issues there. Talk to me about a bit of bandwidth shaping and if customers are asking to prioritize YouTube or deprioritize YouTube and prioritize Office 365, for example.
Yeah, you know, coming from Riverbed many years ago, this was a common topic that this has been around forever, right? Since the old Packeteer devices and performing yes. QoS and packet shaping. I know I'm bringing back some memories here. This isn't a common use case that we see. If you think of the, I think the drivers for this would be probably latency sensitive and jitter sensitive traffic like voice, maybe RDP as well. We don't see QoS controls as a big driver. The fact that our NewEdge network is already optimized for performance and provides performance overhead, we've over-provisioned this, and plus you have hyperscale resources thanks to the cloud. We already deliver great performance, low latency, and what have you. So it's not a specific use case that we hear. A couple times we've heard requests for this, but it's not a common thing.
We spoke about download of files. What about upload? Talk to me a bit about DLP capabilities. And it's almost borderline with Cosby, like almost different conversation, but still, you know, people are.
Yeah, you know, it's, and I think, the misnomer is that it's all about CASB and uploading of content to a cloud service. That's one of the use cases. But fundamentally, when you think of DLP and data protection in general is a cornerstone of Netskope and one of our big differentiators. So we're often chosen by organizations for the strength of our DLP. And the way we think about DLP is the ability to apply DLP across SaaS, IaaS, and web, right? So let me give you some color on what I mean by that. So we have an enterprise grade DLP system that uses an innovative one-pass DLP inspection to cover all of these targets, SaaS, IaaS, and web. So there's not separate DLP systems or templates or what have you. This also covers data at rest in managed cloud applications. So it's independent of what the deployment that is in place. I mentioned that we're able to follow data as it flows between cloud apps and also alert on data exfiltration. Now, the robustness of the DLP also comes from the fact that we support 3,000 data identifiers, more than 1,000 file types, and more than 40 different compliance templates. And when you think of, you know, when you started this, you said, oh, what about uploads of DLP? We can actually inspect the body of files, metadata, data embedded in images, data being posted to social media and collaboration apps, data that's going to blog posts and discussion forums. And then what's really exciting, our data science team has basically launched the industry's first machine learning powered image and object detection. So we can actually identify images such as passports, driver's license numbers, even screenshots that people are taking of sensitive data. We can identify that that's a screenshot. As well as objects like tax forms and resumes and whatnot. So this is machine learning powered. We've trained the algorithm with hundreds of versions of each of these objects, and it's highly accurate. And we do that both with inline inspection, so we can stop, we not only alert, but stop loss of that type of data, as well as API
integration. So this will apply for the apps you're supporting and for the documents upload you're capable.
That is right. That is exactly right. Right. And then we support advanced features like exact data match, fingerprinting, and probably the most important feature of DLP is the ability to bring in rich context to your policies. You know, one of the challenges traditionally for DLP, you know, if you go to Google and you search for DLP, Google might auto-complete and say false positives is the next thing to type, right? It's a well-known challenge with DLP.
Yes, being around.
So not only do you need these features for accuracy, but you got to be able to bring in context about, you know, who the user, the device, the location, you know, the application or the website, the activity they're performing, and bring that into context to form your policy orchestration. It's going to dramatically improve the efficacy and reduce false positives.
I'm looking forward to have a separate discussion about DLP in context.
We could talk 2 hours about DLP.
Yes. There's a lot of innovation. I agree. Yeah. I guess it's time to move on to the next section. Let's talk about the POC part. How do you POC? What's the best way to POC? You mentioned identifying a user.
Yeah, so you know, POC runs in different different levels. We've had some POCs even for some of our large customers, where they will basically roll out a Netskope client to 10 or 15 of their most active users, right, or stakeholders, if you will. And then they run through a series. It's all about a use case driven POC is what's successful, right? Don't just try to look for malware being downloaded from the web. Don't just try to look for stopping PCI data going to a cloud application. Every vendor supports that. It's really coming up with the use cases that really matter. Look for cloud enabled threats, being able to detect that it is the personal instance of Google Drive that we talked about versus the corporate instance, et cetera, et cetera. So build out use cases that really drive, what is gonna help the customer with regards to being able to achieve the outcomes they need. But typical POC is, it lasts anywhere from 3 days to 3 weeks, depending on the scope. We've also seen some pretty comprehensive ones.
Anything that means about the POC?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Yeah, and you mentioned it's easy to start. It's literally 5 minutes to get onboarded.
Yeah, that's it. And again, if you go with the simplest deployment option, which is the Netskope client, I can show you in just a moment, but it's very, very simple to get started and roll out. I actually, when I interviewed at Netskope about 6 years ago with the team, I got the offer from Netskope and I said, okay, this sounds like a great opportunity. I love the vision, but you have to give me the product to play with for 2 days before I make a decision. They were kind of shocked. They've never had a candidate do that before. But I went home that night. They gave me a login to a Netskope tenant along with the documentation. And I ended up literally, it took me from scratch. I'd never played with the product before. It took me 20 minutes to deploy a Netskope client to my wife's laptop, put in a policy. So what happened is my wife went to Facebook and she got a pop-up that said, blocked her, and it said, stop Facebooking, spend time with your husband. And I said, that's the company that I'm joining tomorrow, right?
Nice.
So that was a guy that's never played with the product, that in 20 minutes I had it deployed and a policy already orchestrated, and I had an end user result, which happened to be my wife. And she still stayed married to me after that, by the way.
This is great. And we're almost ready for the open discussion. Let's quickly talk about integration with some other vendors on the technical side.
Yeah, so I think I mentioned earlier, our platform was built to be open and integrated. So we have partnerships with dozens of security products. And we also have tight integration with identity, SIEM, EDR, and many more. Threat intelligence is a big area for us. And we have deep integration with vendors such as CrowdStrike and Carbon Black, where we actually support bidirectional intelligence sharing. We have a capability called a Netskope Cloud Threat Exchange. It's a plugin system that shares IOCs back and forth between a number of different products. And you can actually build your own plugin if you have a product that hasn't been built yet. So integration is one of the core pillars to the platform.
Thank you. And this brings us to the last question in this series. So what would be the three reports or metrics that can show the before and after the state where I have Netskope deployed? Something, that I would take a CISO to the board.
Yeah, that's a very, very important part of again, delivering customer outcomes. We talked earlier about the rich data that we collect on cloud and web usage. When you think of our reports, they're used in many different ways, from helping to perform an ongoing assessment of cloud usage risk to communicating to the board, in your example. Now, the most popular reports are the trends in cloud adoption. We're kind of the finger on the pulse of digital transformation at the organization, how is their cloud adoption increased? But even more importantly for the security team, as they're reporting up to upper management and making that board level presentation, it's being able to present on the threat and data loss events that were remediated, right? It's, hey, here's our investment that we've made in this security platform, and here's what it means to the organization as far as helping safely enable all of this adoption of personal devices cloud usage and letting people do what they do safely.
Great. Thank you. We reached the open topic discussion. You mentioned about demo. I know we're running a bit out of time, but we still have time for a demo if you have time.
Yeah, let me, I'll do a brief, just show you a couple things. Let me share my screen here. I'm going to go ahead and make my screen a little bigger here. Okay, so here I'm going to log into the Netskope console. So the first thing that we are, we're basically showing a summary of cloud and web usage over the last 90 days. This is my own, tenant here. So there's a, number of applications that have been used in this case, the last 90 days, percentage of applications in use or new applications over that time frame, websites visited, users, byte counts, et cetera. And if I scroll down, I basically get usage widgets across, what malicious websites have been visited, malware events that Netskope was able to protect against, DLP incidents, as well as cloud usage at the bottom. Now, it's also worth pointing out that with the Cloud Confidence Index, this is the database that we have more than 33,000 different cloud applications. And each cloud application is assessed an enterprise readiness score based on more than 50 different criteria. So I can go ahead and look at cloud storage applications like Droplr. I can zoom in and look at what the results are across these different categories, much of which is modeled after the Cloud Security Alliance's Cloud Controls Matrix. This particular app scored very low. So what I can do is I could take this score and reflect it in policy. So this is kind of a little bit of the visibility, if you will. I can also go and look at deeper visibility, get like a per user view. Here's this view of this user's traffic over that same trending interval, usage over time, activities, the geolocation of the user. Some of the applications the user has accessed, websites the user has visited, a lot of ESPN usage, but more importantly, some of the incidents that are tied to this particular user with regards to, have their credentials been compromised in a past data breach? Is there any anomalous behavior tied to this user? Any DLP incidents, malware events, and also malicious websites that have been visited for that particular user. So that's kind of the visibility. The last part I just want to briefly show you is the real-time protection. So now that I've got all cloud, web, and private app traffic going from my endpoint here to the Netskope Security Cloud, and I'm working from my home office here in San Ramon, California, what I can do is I can start crafting policies that start addressing use cases for these particular, for that traffic that Netskope is now seeing. So one example here is I want to go ahead and block sensitive data going to any discussion forum, cloud storage app, collaboration app, personal website, blog, all one policy. I'm bringing in multiple DLP profiles. So I'm looking for PCI data, confidential data with this company, any passport data, et cetera, even screenshots. And then I'm going to go ahead and block that going to any of these environments. And then what I can also do is I could follow that up with basically a policy that says, let's allow full access if it is the corporate instance, so this is the instance awareness that we have of those different cloud services. So we're going to allow it going to the corporate instance of Google Drive, Office 365, and OneDrive. So if I go to put on my user hat now, and let's say I go to Google Drive and I want to exfiltrate some data, and I've downloaded, basically, I've got this product roadmap data. Mm-hmm. And I'm in my corporate instance of Google Drive. So, and I have a new version of the roadmap that I need to collaborate on. I was allowed to do it because it's the corporate instance. But if I log in to my personal instance of Google Drive, and I've got this folder says juicy data from my new employer, and I go ahead and I try to exfiltrate that particular data, what I'm going to go ahead and do, let's see here. Oops. I think I forgot to enable Netscope, of course. So what it would normally do is it would block Netscope because it detects the exfiltration. So the last thing I'm going to show you upload? So that is, you could block the upload or the important part there, you could block the download or the upload. The important part there is the upload and understanding whether it is a corporate or a personal instance. So in this example, here we were able to detect a data exfiltration activity. This was actually, somebody went into Salesforce, they downloaded this object called Netscope price list. And then they uploaded it to their OneDrive account. So we see the sequence of events, and then you can click into this and you can see this user's activity during that time frame. But the key here is not only get alerted, but stop that exfiltration from taking place.
And it's important because we never passed an endpoint. It all happened in the cloud, I guess.
That is exactly right. All of the inspection, all of the activities, everything that is being processed takes place in the cloud. Here, I tried to go to this app called WeTransfer that doesn't score very well. So I have a policy in place that basically blocks access to WeTransfer. It alerts and coaches the user, and then it redirects them to the Office 365 OneDrive account. So you kind of have this acceptable use policy in place.
Bob, well, this going to be more CASB, outbound browsing, or combination between them?
This is the next gen Secure Web Gateway. So you're taking inline CASB plus Secure Web Gateway plus inline DLP to be able to achieve that. And the beauty of that is if I go to a website here and I try to, upload some data, and let's see if I have sensitive data here. It's a website. So our DLP works across SaaS, IaaS, and web. And nice. Whether it's in this case, a discussion forum post, or if it's going to a cloud application, and not only browser traffic, but if I open up like my Microsoft Teams application, and again, I attempt to, take data and copy and paste it in, for example, directly, this isn't even a browser, right? This is going directly in. It blocks that activity from taking place too.
Nice.
So supports awesome. Native apps, browser traffic, and then SaaS, IaaS, and web, all from the same platform and the same same DLP engine and the same Netscope client. So that's kind of the quick and dirty. I'd be happy to redirect folks to a lot of the demo videos that we have on netscope.com.
You almost read my mind. If people want to POC, if people want to learn more, what should they do? Would you forward me some URLs? I can put in podcast description, emails. What's the best way? Should it be the phone number?
The easy way is I'm Netscope's evangelist. So it's bob@netscope.com. And I would love to hear from you. And I'd be happy to put you in touch with a local team to talk about doing a POC or at least learning more about the platform.
Great. We'll definitely link to your email, our LinkedIn account, and to some of the content later on. Thank you very much.
Great. Well, thank you very much. And it was a pleasure participating in your first podcast series.
Please remember to subscribe to our podcast and join us for our next episode.